The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
Things are getting awfully interesting in the Stanley Cup Final as we bring you Episode 15 of our Stanley Cup Playoff Report. And Drew, we had our first blowout of the series, a 6-1 win for the Florida Panthers as they open up the home portion of their schedule in the Stanley Cup Final over at Amerant Bank Arena. What are your thoughts on what the meaning of this game is?
Well, the meaning of the game is that when the Florida Panthers are on their A game, they're the toughest team to play against in the league because their top guys always contribute. Their goaltender is always there to make the saves. And they are an extremely frustrating, hard team to play against. They punish you when they play. And what you saw from the response by the Edmonton Oilers was a surprising, immature game by a team that's been to the Stanley Cup Finals now against these Florida Panthers last year. It was very interesting to see how the Edmonton Oilers, Danny, I think, quit on this game. It was 4-1. The game was still within reach, but then they got so undisciplined and so frustrated and so emotional in a negative way because of the way Florida was playing against them that they just decided we're just going to try to exact as much revenge as we can. And they took themselves out of the game. You could see it on their coach's face. You could see it on the player's face. The Florida Panthers won that game, not only mentally or physically, but mentally as well.
Well, they sure did. And, you know, it's kind of funny. In my mind, I don't think it was the situation where all the physical stuff in the third period really is going to matter as it moves forward. For me, it's more like the first 20 minutes was where Florida won the game.
100%. They got off to a great start. Again, Brad Marchand, man, I'm telling you, what a guy this guy is. Unreal. And they got their game going early, got game some traction. But yeah, the physical stuff doesn't carry over. All that stuff is whatever. The guy's just getting frustrated. But to me, it was a message sent by the Florida Panthers that when we play our game, we are very tough to beat. But once again, Danny, that start of the game is so important. We've seen it time and time again. The last two games where the Florida Panthers have scored first, they have won.
Well, and they did score first in this one, less than a minute into the game.
Off a face-off, Anton Lundell behind the net, the offensive end. And he bounces one out front. This one loose. Marchand shot. He scores! And the Panthers are on the board early. Brad Marchand out of the left circle. 56 seconds in. He pounced on a loose puck, and he cashes in. 1-0 Panthers.
What a job, too, by Lundell and Lösterine, and those are the line mates that were out there with him in the opening minute just to establish a tone. But you know what? There's the old reliable Brad Marchand, a pain in the neck to everybody. And guess what? He is the oldest player to score a goal in the first three games of a Stanley Cup final, and his captain, Sasha Barkov, talked about it.
It's great, and Marchie has been great for us ever since he got here. So very, very nice guy, and unbelievable player, so really happy for him.
I don't think about 6 months ago that Alexander Barkov would have said that Marchand was a nice guy, would you?
No, not at all. But you can see it. You can see it. Like, you know, the whole thing about shooting rats at him is hilarious because, you know, in Florida, they throw the rats on the ice. And then when they win the game, at the end of the game, he stands at the bench still, and he's done this in Boston, congratulating everybody when they're coming off the ice. And then Barkov starts to shoot rats at them.
The big part of the first period where Edmonton started to lose it was when they started taking crazy penalties. And of course, two of them were by Evander Kane very early on in the period. That gave Florida some momentum. And then it turned out late in the period, they were on the power play. And who else but Carter Verhaeghe popped one in.
Bennett far boards, back out to Schmidt at the right point. High slot Rodriguez to Verhaeghe. Verhaeghe a chance, he scores! It's a power play goal for Carter Verhaeghe! Top corner pass, Skinner, 2-0 Panthers!
Paul Maurice with that second unit elects to go to it again.
How about that? Paul Maurice deciding to throw out the second power play unit to start the power play. How many times have we seen coaching decisions like that paying off?
Well, with Paul Maurice lately, all the time. Man, he's pressing the right buttons. As much as I love Nico Sturm and the way he plays, after they were down 2-0 to Toronto, Nico came out, another guy came out. They put that Greer, Nosek line together with Jonah Gajewicz, and that line has really paid off for him. But in this situation, he puts that group out there, and like you said, who else? Carter Verhaeghe. What a shot that was.
Edmonton got one on the power play in the second period. And again, speaking about older guys, Corey Perry, age 40, coming up big and once again getting the Oilers at least back into the game at that point.
We've got no Connor McDavid on the power play unit.
Skate.
Shot
skate.
By Bouchard, ripped home by Corey Perry, and the Oilers get a power play goal without Connor McDavid on the ice. It's Perry who scores on the man advantage, and the Oilers whittle the deficit to 2-1. Corey Perry with his 9th of the playoffs and 5th on the power play.
Amazing playoffs for Corey Perry, especially at his age. But notice that the emotions of Jack Michaels and the Oiler crew were not really there at that point, because they probably sensed what was happening.
Well, they must have, because that's a very low-key call for Jack.
So now it's 2-1, but still you could tell by the tone of the emotions that you just heard from the play-by-play call that the Oilers weren't exactly in it yet. And it didn't last too long. It only lasted a minute and 20 seconds before Sam Reinhart, outstanding goal scorer in his own right, made it a 3-1 game, a very important goal for Florida.
And we're right inside the Edmonton zone. It's Klingberg. Far corner, bumped down by Barkov. A battle for a loose puck. Panthers have it. Reinhart, a shot. He scores out of the far circle, up the iron and in. Sam Reinhart gets the Panthers up by a pair once again. Exactly 3 minutes into period number two. 3-1 Panthers. Sam Reinhart.
And it even got better at 7:26 when Sam Bennett, who's having a really amazing Stanley Cup playoff run, picked up another one.
And then Tkachuk in against Klingberg. Puck played to the line, and it's taken away. A breakaway. Luostarinen hands it on. Bennett in. Bennett scores! Top shelf, and the Panthers take a 4-1 lead with 12:34 to go here in the second. What a shift for playoff Sam. The Panthers lead by a trio.
Playoff Sam, that's not bad. He's got 14 goals in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is incredible.
It absolutely incredible. Why Doug Plagans is saying that was what a shift. Coming into the zone, big hit, and then pressure on him again, and that turns the puck over. Tkachuk, Luostarinen, I tell you, the play was really smart just to push the puck up to Bennett and then keep skating to kind of slow down the back checkers. And then Bennett, great move.
Nice
great
move.
Goal. Oh, it was a really good move. And Danny, he's the best player on the ice most shifts. He knows how he has to play, and because he plays that way, he creates opportunities for himself.
Sasha Barkov certainly had something to say about him.
He's been incredible. He's obviously, like, he's scoring goals, but he's doing so much more other stuff. Like, he's carrying the puck in the neutral zone. Like, he's making plays. He's defending well. So he's just unreal right now.
Yeah, going back to Barkov on that play, that goal by Sam Reinhart you played just before. Barkov hasn't been putting the puck in the net. Paul Maurice was asked about that yesterday morning as we record this show before game three about Barkov's got 0 goals. He's only got 2 assists and he's -3 or -4. You know, are you worried about him? And Paul Maurice goes, yeah, we're trading him. And he goes, no, he does everything. And he talks about how complete of a player that Barkov is. And Barkov on the Reinhart goal, he made the play. He made the play to check Klingberg. He made the play to get the puck loose. He made the play to get it to Reinhart and then the goal. So, again, not all the things a player does can be defined by his stat line.
Well, it could be that their emotions got out of control by the time this goal, which I think is my favorite goal of the game, got scored by Aaron Ekblad.
Tkachuk right side, down low, Barkov into the corner. Barkov left it for Tkachuk to Barkov again, right side of the circle. Tkachuk in front, Reinhart, Ekblad, shot, he scores! A power power play goal, and it's one for the highlight reel. They work it around beautifully, and Aaron Ekblad able to cash in. He took the no-look feed from Reinhardt, and the Panthers lead 5-1.
Unbelievable feed by Sam Reinhardt on that play, but how about the presence of mind of Ekblad to kind of slide over there when he saw that the defense for Edmonton kind of committed off to their left, leaving the lane wide open?
All five guys on that goal were amazing. How they ran that play. Barkov on the side, off the boards. It was a Bennett down low. It was so well ran. And then Reinhardt and Ekblad hooking up with it. Reinhardt with behind the back, no looker. But you're right, Aaron Ekblad read that perfectly and showing that timing beats speed. He got to the right place at the right time, and another great shot.
Then it came down to losing their patience. That's what happened with Edmonton. They realized the game was out of hand. They decided to take some matters into their own hands. I remember last year, Paul Maurice said, forget about the score. Just run them so they got nothing left next game. Maybe this was sort of a setup for that for Edmonton when this happened.
Kept it in the Edmonton zone. The chance of we want the cup going. And now Bennett getting popped from behind. And this one ready to explode. And now Bennett's on top. And now we've got mayhem breaking out. Gadjevich and Greer. Big punches landed. Gadjevich throwing left hands on Darnell Nurse. That's the principal bout here. Gadjevich and Nurse as Greer roughed up Ekholm.
Gadjevich trying to get the takedown, Jack.
Gadjevich can't get the takedown. Schmidt now engaged with Connor Brown. And we've got a line brawl. Three fights. Kulikov and Arvidsson initially wrapped up, and now Gadjevich has his right hand free and eats a right uppercut from Darnell Nurse. Gadjevich lands a left jab. And then a right hook. Nurse landed a couple uppercuts early, but now Gadjevich has caught him a couple times. Nurse getting that right hand free. Takes a chopping right. And another right hand and a left jab. Nurse fires back with a right uppercut. And a second right hand over the top. Right hook, Gadjevich. Tremendous fight right at the blue line in front of the Oiler bench. Gadjevich, left jab. Nurse short with an uppercut. Right hook, Gadjevich. What a fight. Still not breaking it up. Gadjevich and Nurse stretching one another out. Gadjevich short with a right hook. And now I think, well, Nurse threw one more right hand, and finally they're tied up. Terrific fight.
By that time, they were defeated. The game was over, and they're probably already thinking about the next contest in this series. But Connor McDavid was asked about the game after it was over, and here's what he said.
That was a weird game. Obviously, when you start in the first with, four penalties, almost half the period, you're killing. So, not a good way to get into your game. Weird game. I thought a lot of power play and penalty kill either way. Never got to our game.
One of the weirdest parts of the game, Drew, I think, was that Edmonton couldn't use the power play to score out of their problems. And that was an interesting thing that happened.
And you remember last year, their penalty kill was almost 100%. They were pretty much unscorable when they are on the penalty kill. And then their power play was always clicking because there's got such, Bouchard with a big shot, Draisaitl with the one-timer, Corey Perry in front, which scored this time, Connor McDavid doing Connor McDavid things. And Jake Walman playing on that first power play unit with his big shot. That's an incredible power play unit, but they couldn't get it going. In fact, the power play actually took some momentum out of them whenever they were able to get on, but they took too many penalties.
To me, the unsung hero for Florida in that area was Gustav Forsling, the way he's getting the pucks, blocking shots. He's playing the best hockey of his career.
Danny, I thought game one, he was absolutely awful. Games two and three, he has been, as you just mentioned, one of the best players on the ice defensively. He's blocking shots. He's clearing pucks. He's doing smart things. He's making sure he takes care of the front of the net, makes great passes out of the zone. You're absolutely right.
One thing that was interesting after the game, Stuart Skinner, the goaltender for the Edmonton Oilers, who did eventually get yanked for Calvin Pickard, who played pretty well, actually, when he came in, took some responsibility for some of those early goals, but Connor McDavid wasn't buying.
I don't know about that. Can we be better on the first one? Maybe just a little bit of a scramble. They get it. We don't. Sure, we can be better, harder in front of them there. The penalty kill, they got some good players, good shooters. You give them that much time, they're going to make their shot. You know, so I don't know how much we're going to put on Stu, but, you know, that's honorable of him, I guess, to try to do that. But, yeah, we can be better for sure.
Well, we had to go to Jake Walman, the former Shark, Drew, to find out what went wrong, get his thoughts.
I think, yeah, we didn't get off to a great start with the penalties. Got behind. We got to clean that up.
Well, something else has to clean up, too. Jake Walman was fined for roughing and unsportsmanlike conduct in the third period. He got fined $5,000. And then there was this other incident, Drew, with the water bottle on the bench. Jake Walman, somehow his glove came off, and A.J. Greer took it on the Florida bench, apparently. And
well,
so
they were chirping at each other.
And so they were chirping at each other, and then Jake Walman leaned over and started squirting. And when it happened, I was kind of distracted for a second. I thought he was just messing around with Brian Boucher, who was between the two benches. And in fact, he had to clean off his iPad or whatever, his replay monitor, because it got some water on it, and he got some water on him. But that's what everybody was laughing at in the booth. But it was more about this situation that happened, and Walman talked about it after the game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously did that for a reason. Won't go into the details. It's just gamesmanship, I guess. You know, it's just got to realize there's cameras everywhere. They see that stuff.
Yep, there's cameras everywhere. There's social media everywhere. It's not like 30 years ago, is it, Drew?
No, it isn't. But you know what, Danny? And on Canadian TV, they didn't show that. They did not show that on Canadian TV at all. Like, I watched every second of that game, and they did not show that one bit. So very interesting, and I'm glad TNT picked it up.
But Walman said now there's 2 days between games, which in a way could work to their advantage to just sort of reset, get the emotions out, and get ready to get back out there.
We'll have a couple of days here to mentally reset. That's the biggest thing after a game like that. Emotions are high, so I mean it's for the Stanley Cup, you know, so it's just not an inch out there, so we got to do it. Everybody's doing everything they can, and it's a grown man's game out there. It's not for the faint of heart. Guys are putting everything on the line, you know.
Well, technically what he got fined for, Drew, was the roughing penalty on Matthew Tkachuk in the third, and there were 85 minutes to Edmonton, 55 minutes to Florida. Not your typical Stanley Cup final game for the last 20 or 25 years.
You know, I agree with you, and all that stuff at the end of the game. You know, the talk was sending a message for next game and blah, 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 which is all garbage. I don't think you can do that. It doesn't work. It was pure frustration. As I said, by the Edmonton Oilers, a very immature game. But Jake Walman's right. You got 2 days off. It's only one game. Doesn't matter if they beat you 6-1 or 2-1 in double overtime. It is just 2-1. It's 1-4, as you and I both know. Everybody knows it's 1-4. So you do get that chance to reset and get your game going in the right direction.
I think the spotlight definitely is going to be on the Oilers superstars as to how they handle things in game number 4. Fascinating times, and I can't wait for it to continue.
We continue now with the Sharks playoff report on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Well, Drew, we have a former Shark that is now a head coach in the National Hockey League, and his name is Marco Sturm. He is the head coach of the Boston Bruins, which makes him the 30th coach in the history of Bruins hockey to be behind the bench, but the first one that involves a former San Jose Shark. And one thing that Marco Sturm always has had in his life is high culture. He talked about that in his news conference.
Yeah, I always call it the heartbeat of the locker room, right? And that has to come from the guys inside. And again, I've been through it, right? I've been through it because I was part of it. And having guys like Bergie and Z and myself, and we added pieces after that changed everything. And for me, it started right at practice, you know? Little things like that, the way we prepared, the way we competed, every day, it doesn't matter if it's practice or game. That for me changed the whole thing right away just by doing that. I think our mindset, I was talking about that, winning hockey games, not just going into hockey games and play the game. No, we actually want to win. We do everything about it. And again, it trickled down. And that's why for me, it's so important that that the core guys got to lead, right? And And I'm going to tell you this, I already talked to a bunch of guys, all my veterans on the current team right now, and I can tell right away they learn from the Bergeron, they learn from the charter, because they already have it in there. And that really got me excited too. And I know we just got to guide them again, and again, we got to reestablish the whole thing, because these guys are not here anymore. So now it's going to be up to us and the new group to lead this group to a new era.
Of all of the San Jose Sharks players that started their career here and got traded somewhere else and played a little bit longer for other teams, Marco's one of the ones that I hold in highest regard.
Well, involved in the biggest trade in San Jose Sharks history, and proof that you have to give to in order to get. You can't help but love Marco Sturm, just to the person he is. But think about the job he did as a very young coach with Germany in the Olympics, losing to Russia at first for the gold medal game. People still talk about one of the best coaching jobs in the Olympics ever. Marco Sturm is a smart hockey guy. Marco Sturm is a wonderful human being. I wish him nothing but success, because he is deserving of it. He's worked hard for it. He's been a good assistant coach, and now he has got the chance. Well, he was a good head coach with the Ontario Reign, and his what he just said right there, 100% right. It's about the guys. It's about the guys building the culture. It's about the core, and you're there just to help guide them.
And he said he liked the core that's there. He knows there's going to be changes to the team. But he also talked about the fact he's got hunger in there, because he was part of that Bruins rebuild.
Yes.
But he got traded the year before they won the Stanley Cup in 2011, went to Los Angeles, which was a big move because it got him acquainted with that organization, spent a couple of years as an assistant in L.A. Then he became the head coach of the Ontario Reign, lost to the San Jose Barracuda in his final game as coach of that team. But he talked about what he was most proud of from those Ontario years.
You know, I mean, you know, learning from, especially from a guy like Todd McLennan, I mean, it was, for me, it was the perfect fit, the perfect coach to learn from, you know, then going back to the minors. And you got to understand, sometimes I say, yeah, now I'm ready, or you can hear Marco is ready. But you got to know, I probably knew the on-ice stuff, right? I knew it as a player, a coach. I seen a lot. And now getting a lot of information from Todd and how he runs it, how he prepares. So that's something I think I wanted to get better at. And I needed someone, I would say, to guide me through it. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why the minor league, that's why those years kick in, right? Because I had a chance to put it all together. All right, to put it all together. And again, after 2 years, I felt like it's time, right? And I said it before, I had a little taste with San Jose last year, and definitely this year. You know, you learn from those kind of years, being ahead, being controlled, being charged every night, and those years were so important for me. All right. And that's why I'm glad I did it that way.
When he mentioned San Jose there last year, he was talking about when he interviewed for the Sharks head coaching job that Ryan Warsawski ended up getting. But Drew, I wanted you to listen to all of this, because there's San Jose Sharks hockey written all over what he's talking about. In fact, he was also asked what coaches were the biggest influences on him.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I going through a lot of teams, you want to have your favorites, coaches, teams, teammates, whatever it is. I thought the older style, the old generation with Daryl Sutter and Claude Julien were by far for me the best coaches I ever had. Why? Because they were very honest to me, very direct, even if I like it or not. But also, you got to understand, things change, right? Not everyone is the same. Is Marco Sturm. Not everyone is Patrice Bergeron. Everyone is different. And that's the beauty about coaching right now, is you can't treat everyone the same way, right? So you got to have a good feel for it, who to poke and who not. And that's why I still like that mix in our locker room, right? Because of, like I mentioned, from the older guys, they still have that Bruins DNA. I love it, all right? But there will be some other guys I can treat those guys just like the older guys. So again, that's where we at. If you look around in the NHL, the coaches are getting higher right now. You know, I feel like this is a little bit the new trend here, and I'm one of them. And I'm going to do my best to, you know, get everyone on the same page and get the most importantly, get everything, get the best out of everyone. All right. And this will be my job.
That's the main job of being a coach, Drew. But I wanted you to get some thoughts on number one, his reflections on Darryl being one of his favorite coaches in San Jose, and also how much Todd McClellan has meant to his career.
Well, a couple of years ago, that was last year when I was still doing the radio show here in Saskatoon. I had Marco on. We spent a good half hour together on the radio when I was talking to him about coaching. And he brought up Todd, and Todd was a very big influence on him, as you just heard. Did a wonderful job on giving Marco the blueprint to help move forward. But then Marco had to take it and expand it to make it his own with the Ontario Reign. And he did that. It doesn't surprise me that Claude Julien and Darryl Sutter were the two guys he liked the most to play for, because Marco was always, always, always honest. He never shied away from criticism. He never shied away from taking the onus on himself that he needed to be better. We saw him was one of those guys that was first on the ice, last off the ice. I love the fact that he talked about, though, that everybody is different now. Not everybody's Marco Sturm. Not everybody's Patrice Bergeron. You've got to find a way to make these guys better and help guide them. And sometimes that takes individual one-on-ones. Sometimes you can talk to them as a group. But honesty with Claude Julien and with Darryl Sutter, they were honest with him, whether he liked it or not. And that never can change as a coach. I loved it.
No, it's awesome. And of course, it reminds me of a lot of the things that Ryan Warsawski's been saying the last year, too, as the head coach of the Sharks. This new era of head coaches in the NHL is impressive to me.
Very. And you know what, Danny? Younger guys, and you have to be younger, you know, you got younger players. So you're going to have to find a way to relate to them. You have to find ways to relate to these players now. They want to know why. And as Trent Yanni used to say, you got to get players to play the way they don't want to play so they can become the players they want to become. In other words, you're going to have to get them out of their comfort zone. So how do you do that? Well, you do that by relating to them and showing them this will be good for you when it's good for the team. If you do it this way, it helps us, but it's also going to help you. You have to give guys that why. And with Marco and with Ryan and with guys coming in now, the new and you're looking and you're wondering who's going to get hired in Dallas now. And maybe it's Neil Graham from the Texas Stars. Maybe it's Manny Malhotra. You're seeing younger coaches come in and really do a great job. Spencer Carberry is another one, you know, coach of the year. These guys understand that it's, again, another great saying from a former NHLer and coach, Mark Habscheid, players have to know how much you care before they care about how much you know. And I think that says it all when it comes to players these days and the need for coaches to be able to relate to them.
So our best wishes for Marco Sturm, except for when he faces off against the San Jose Sharks next season. We know that he'll do a great job, as Ryan Warsawski is doing for the Sharks. And here's to a San Jose-Boston Stanley Cup final somewhere down the line. Wouldn't that be great? You mentioned Manny Malhotra. Malhotra is the head coach of the Abbotsford Canucks. Neil Graham is the head coach of Austin, the Texas Stars. Yeah. Manny's team just beat Neil's team in the playoffs. And in the Calder Cup playoffs, it's Abbotsford going up against Charlotte. It's kind of interesting to see the San Jose Sharks connections on both sides. Number one, you got Manny Malhotra in Abbotsford. Their leading scorer is Linus Karlsson, whom the Sharks drafted and traded to Vancouver for Jonathan Dahlin a couple of years ago. And on the other side of the ice, I didn't realize he was here and playing so many games, but Kaapo Kähkönen has won 10 games in the playoffs for Charlotte, and he's the guy that's kind of driving the bus there. And John Leonard, former Shark, is their leading scorer.
Yep, absolutely. And Kaapo came over around the trade deadline, and he's been playing absolutely wonderful hockey for them. And John Leonard's playing great. Charlotte is Florida's AHL team. So that's really interesting. It's a hell of a flight, though, from Charlotte to commercial flight from Charlotte to Vancouver or / Abbotsford. But Abbotsford was in Texas, so they were able to go right to Charlotte to start the series. The series goes 2-3-2. Abbotsford has the two, and then the
Charlotte's got the two.
Charlotte's got the two, and then it's three for Abbotsford in their home, and then two in Charlotte again if necessary for game six and seven. And both coaches did a great job. I'm thinking Neil Graham will get certainly a talk and an interview with Dallas. But boy, I tell you what, Manny Malhotra would be the next guy on my list because I think he's done a hell of a job coaching in Abbotsford.
Well, we'll see how everybody reacts for the next game in the Stanley Cup final. But until then, that's it for our Stanley Cup playoff report.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup playoff report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.